Ralph Schoen, then.
And Maya Schoen. Today we have a very special 3-hour program for you. Between 5 and 6, our regular Taking Aim hour, and then after the WBAI news, we will return from 7 until 9. Today we have with us Richard Gert Gage, AIA, 20 years an architect, and who has been organizing engineers and architects throughout the United States to discover the truth. 9/11, and particularly they are examining the physical evidence. Our premiums are gifts to you for your contribution to WBAI. One, Nanothermite, an incredible lecture by Dr. Stephen Jones that he gave this year in Sacramento on April 30th. It examines new research about the dust from the WTC buildings, the controlled demolition of these buildings.
Well, in particular, Maya, as what Stephen Jones in this particular talk and in the papers that are associated with it establishes, is that a material known as thermite and a particular modality of that, nanothermite, which is an explosive, are omnipresent in the residue, the debris, and the dust, which goes to the issue of the controlled demolition and the explosions that brought down the World Trade Center towers.
Your gift to your contribution to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, of $50 brings you this incredible DVD of the lecture and the questions and answers and also special features on the DVD. As well, for a $100 contribution, we have a 2-DVD set of David Gray Griffin, the theologist and author of many books particularly examining the official debunking the 9/11 Commission report. This is his lecture, 9/11, The Myth and Reality, which examines 9 myths about 9/11. And this was given at both the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco and at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland. And it exposes the official fiction of 9/11 for what it truly is, what he calls a sacred myth. Both in mind, we have a special offer of $125 for both the nanothermite and 9/11, the myth and reality. The number to call, 212-209-2950. But first, we are so fortunate to have Richard Gage, who's been touring the entire country, with us here today. Richard.
Maya, thank you for having me on. I am very, very grateful.
Well, we're very happy to have you, very proud to have you, Richard. Richard, you have been the pivotal figure in organizing architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Could you give a description of that activity and how it has grown and where the current standing of these efforts lies?
You bet. About 3.5 years ago, I heard David Ray Griffin on the radio, Free Speech Radio, out here in Berkeley. And I was just floored. I'm a Reagan Republican. I had never heard any other alternative view as to how these towers may have come down. And what David Ray Griffin was saying made sense. And I would never have heard it were it not for Free Speech Radio. So I do, first off, want to implore all of the listeners to become members and make your pledge, because without this kind of station speaking truths that we will never hear on mainstream radio, we would not have people like myself who get woken up to this information, do the research, find out that, oh my God, this is true. There is evidence in the dust for the explosive demolition of all 3 World Trade Center towers. This is the story of the century. And I knew that as soon as I heard it, and I couldn't believe there were not other architects and engineers out there speaking it, shouting it from the rooftops. And so I began, and with one architect, that was myself, and now we have 963 architects and engineers demanding a real investigation based on this evidence that we're going to be discussing tonight of this explosive destruction of these 3 skyscrapers.
And Richard, at one time in the past, when we had you on, we were offering your own incredible lecture, which has since been revised many times and upgraded, about the reasons why this was a controlled demolition, particularly of WT-7. So today, if you could give a brief analysis of the reasons why you call this a controlled demolition. After all, the collapse of these were three tallest World Trade Center buildings were complete. That's very remarkable, and at near free fall speed. And the symmetry, the fact that they collapsed right on their footprint, is only happens in history with controlled demolitions. But you put the scientific method to the test when you analyzed the collapse of these buildings.
Well, sure, but the first thing to do is to make architects and engineers and others across America aware of the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is a building that's 47 stories tall, World Trade Center 7, that on the afternoon of 9/11, not being hit by an airplane, but some debris from the World Trade Center North Tower, and some fires were started. And this building at 5:20 in the afternoon of 9/11 begins a precipitous, sudden, symmetrical collapse at free fall acceleration. That means it falls just as fast in the first 100 feet, as admitted and acknowledged by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, tasked with explaining these collapses. And 100 feet of free fall, that's eight stories, no resistance from the 40,000 tons of structural steel in this building, and uniform lack of resistance symmetrically across several floors all at once. The 24 core columns have to be taken out within a tenth of a second of each other or so in order for this building to fall straight down and at free fall acceleration. Now, a building can't convert all of its gravitational potential into kinetic energy or motion and do any other work like crushing steel. It's going to slow down if it has to crush steel. So when architects and engineers become aware of this, they go, oh, my God, of course, that's a controlled demolition. What else can it be? Well, the official story tells us that this is a destruction by fire. In fact, there are 8 to 10 fairly small fires in this building. NIST calls them large fires. But the videos and photos don't show that. And they suggest that we have a new phenomenon never before seen in high-rise fires called thermal expansion, which expanded beams pushing a girder off its seat, causing successive floor failures, the internal cascading failure of this building, and then the overall global collapse that we see on our website. In just 6.5 seconds, this building is completely gone into a pile like a house of cards. An exact replica of a classic controlled explosive demolition. Now, you have to see this, so go to our website. It's ae911truth.org. That stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. This is what we start with architects and others, because they immediately recognize it. Everybody's seen it in the old hotels in Las Vegas, for instance. We know what it is. Not only that, we have the evidence or eyewitness testimony of explosions at the base of this building. We have foreknowledge by construction workers and policemen caught on CNN telling people to move back. The building's going to blow up. We have the announcement of the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it happened by the BBC. They apologize for this horrible error, citing the confusing events of that day. What, does this make them psychic or what? It's a real problem for the official story, but more so than all of that is the several tons of molten iron found at the base of this building and the base of the Twin Towers. Now, these fires can only get to be about 1600 degrees, but molten steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2700 degrees, more than twice that temperature. So what created all of this molten metal? Well, Dr. Stephen Jones, whom is the author of the DVD that your listeners can have for if they pledge today, and it is incredible, insightful, it's amazing. This nuclear physicist, formerly from Brigham Young University, analyzes pieces of the previously molten metal. He finds that it's molten iron, not steel. It's not aluminum from a jet plane or anything else. It is molten iron, and it has in it the chemical evidence of thermite, which is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. But that's just the beginning of the evidence. It just mounts throughout all of the dust laid 4 to 12 inches thick throughout lower Manhattan that day. We have evidence of billions of tiny iron microspheres. These have no way of having been formed save for an aluminothermic reaction, this whole series of them, under explosive conditions. This thermite, which produces molten iron, by the way, as its byproduct, is spewed or atomized by the explosiveness. And this is the only way these billions of spheres could get in all the dust. And they're found by R.J. Lee and USGS doing toxicological studies. The spheres have in it the evidence also of thermite, aluminum, iron, manganese, sulfur. It goes on and on. It's just a perfect match. So Dr. Jones speculates what would have been in the original mixture if this was thermite, and he starts looking back into his dust samples. He's got four dust samples, one from the Brooklyn Bridge that was collected just 10 minutes away, 10 minutes after the collapse of the Twin Towers. Well, one sample is taken on top of a high-rise three blocks away from the tower, and one from an apartment directly across from the South Tower, whose windows blew in and filled the place full of this 100-micron dust, like talcum powder this concrete was reduced to. It's absolutely extraordinary. So what does he find in the dust? These tiny red-gray chips, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them in every sampling. The largest one he found was a 16th of an inch long. The red side is composed of, once again, iron, aluminum, and other components that are clearly the evidence of this chemical signature of thermite. But not any ordinary thermite. This stuff is, the particles are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. How did they get so small and in the perfect ratio mixed for thermite? 3/4 to 1/4. 3/4 iron oxide particles to 1/4 aluminum. And what about those particles? Not only are they 1,000 times smaller than the human hair, but they are perfectly rhomboidal, the iron oxide particles, in shape, about 200 nanometers across. The faceted, engineered, perfectly uniform particles, and then the aluminum platelets are 40 nanometers thick by about 500 nanometers. They're perfectly uniform, and again, in the perfect ratio to make nanothermite. And when I say nanothermite, this is a thermite that is engineered to be more explosive, because normally thermite is an incendiary. And what happens is when you have these extremely small particles, the surface area magnifies enormously, so the chemical reaction is virtually instantaneous, creating an explosive product, but without the large bang of normal high-energy explosives like C4 and RDX, and without the bright flash. So if you were trying to perform a deceptive controlled demolition, you might use this instead of normal high-energy explosives. So this leads us all down this terrible path, of course.
This is critical, but let me ask you about the following. There are approximately 90,000 tons of this dust, which is a measure of the extent to which this huge, vast amount of concrete is virtually pulverized, along with the steel girders, and you have this residue, as you've described it, of molten metal on top of that. And those characteristics, chemical features that you were describing with the ferrous oxide and the aluminum and the zinc and the manganese, are absent either from paint or from the actual structure of the building. Therefore, their presence is a signature of the explosive that you're describing, the thermite, the nanothermite.
Yes, indeed. And the uniformity and size of these particles, they don't manufacture paint in a factory that's capable of creating nano-sized particles. There's no reason to use that in paint. And paint, of course, as you mentioned, doesn't have the ratio of aluminum to it doesn't have aluminum at all, but it doesn't have the ratio of anything to iron oxide such as would be required for explosive nanothermite. In fact, they put this stuff in an oven, a type of oven called a DSC, differential scanning calorimeter. And what happens is at 422 degrees centigrade, these go off. They have a conflagration, and this doesn't happen with paint whatsoever. There's more energy coming out of this stuff. Dr. Jones and Niels Herit from Holland separately confirm that this is along the lines of behavior of previously published documents on nanothermite and at what temperature they release their energy as well, 420 centigrade.
And in his seminal document that he wrote with Niels Herit and Jeffrey Farah and Kevin Ryan, Frank Legge, Daniel Farnsworth, James Gourley, Bradley Larson, and Greg Roberts, active thermitic material discovered in dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center catastrophe, they write that originally what they expected to find in the dust was dry paint chips, but that closer inspection and testing showed that that wasn't in the case. And the primary reason for that is that there's absolutely no zinc present in all these samples. Could you explain a little further what he means by that?
Well, zinc is a key component of paint that is designed to protect steel from corrosion. It's a primer paint, and the zinc keeps the oxidation from happening, turning steel to rust. So it would be a key component of any primer. And I think what you're saying is singularly missing from the chips, and I can't confirm that myself, but there are others clearly who can. And the paper, this 25-page peer-reviewed paper that you're just citing, has been published in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal, and it is taking scientific circles by storm right now. People have quit and been fired over this. It's really quite a controversy, but no one has provided an alternative explanation as to the ingredients and their size and their uniformity and their proportions and how they ignite in a differential scanning calorimeter, and why they also show the auxiliary chemical elements that are found and needed in an aluminothermic reaction.
And the lecture, the premium that we're offering, nanothermite, for your contribution of $50, goes into much of this discussion that appears in this extremely detailed scientific report that Dr. Jones and Dr. Herit have been the primary authors of. And that is available, as you say, on the Open Chemical Physics Journal. And by open, it means it's accessible, open access, and you can read it on the Internet. Before we go to the actual lecture itself.
Richard, I think the critical issue here is that the examination of this dust, and let us emphasize the enormity of 90,000 tons of dust in the vast The evidence of this dust includes the presence of thermite, and in particular, the evidence for thermate, severe high-temperature corrosion attack on the steel, including oxidation and sulfidation, and the sulfidation transforming the thermite into thermate, which is a type of explosive only developed and available to the Department of Defense and the Pentagon at high levels of security. Is that not a rather clear smoking gun of the role of the authorities in the presence of this material and the particular weaponized character of it for explosives capable of doing exactly what it did do, which is down a building?
I I would back off on a couple of points there, Ralph. The addition of sulfur to thermite does make thermate, but that is fairly common, commonly used. It lowers the melting point of steel. That's not a weaponized version per se. That's
okay.
Normal incendiary. What the weaponized version is when these extremely small particles are used between the iron oxide particles and the aluminum particles and used in a Sol-Gel type thermate. These particles are embedded in a silica matrix, and this is so high-tech, it's only made in the most sophisticated Defense Department contracting laboratories. This stuff is not made in a cave in Afghanistan.
And Dr. Jones makes the point on this DVD, in this lecture, that the technology for nanothermite was not developed at the time of the construction of the World Trade Center towers. And so this could not have been embedded. It has to have been placed for a controlled demolition, which involves the security company of the World Trade Center, and possibly this was done at the time of the renovation of the elevator system of the World Trade Center buildings, because this was a sophisticated placement of the nanothermite.
It's very sophisticated, and you're right, it could not have been done more than 10 years ago. Lawrence Livermore Lab produced papers on this only at that time. It's only about 10-year-old technology, as far as we know. One question would be, of course, how would somebody have gotten access to the World Trade Center? After all, they had probably tens of thousands of employees. Well, if you had access to the elevator shafts in each of these buildings, Twin Towers, you had access to the core columns and beams and floor structure therein, and you might not have any of the occupants aware, but especially if you had the excuse, say, of an elevator modernization, which in fact was going on the 9 months prior to 9/11, the largest elevator modernization in the world, and it was documented very well in March of 2001, Elevator World. The ACE elevator had 85 employees working on this project at the time of the first impact, and they fled at that time. They did not stick around to help the firefighters rescue the victims. And they are supposed to do that. Traditionally, they are called upon. They're experts in these delivery systems for rescue. So it is a scandal, and USA Today documented this scandal back 2001 or 2002. It's very, very interesting. And of course, you mentioned security company. You would think they would have to be involved because we're talking about several tons of thermite here. In fact, Dr. Jones speculates, analyzing the dust and the weight of the dust and the amount of spheres and the amount of chips in these dust, that there's at least 10 tons of material here found in the dust itself. And much more than that, that did burn up.
Well, Richard, we want to have some time to play part of the lecture. We're going to have you on again. This has been absolutely fascinating. Everyone, please look at ae911truth.org. The website has expanded so much since the last time I looked at it. You have many, many lectures and lots of documentation and links to many important papers in the field, including the active thermitic material.
Let me just mention that what Richard has just said here, describing the quantity of the explosive material that's involved, and the sophistication of it and the advanced technology that it entails, and its restriction to high-level Defense Department and Pentagon sources, it is transparent from just this information alone, brothers and sisters, that the explosions that brought down the towers were not the work of random people 10,000 miles away from the United States. This is an inside job, and only the authorities and only the most highly secure officialdom are capable of implementing an operation of this character.
Well, thanks, Richard, and good luck with your lecture tonight in Kansas.
Thank you very much, Maya and Ralph. I'm
great to be with
help.
You again, Richard, and we appreciate your coming on.
You bet. Thank you.
Again, today on Taking AIM, we're presenting two premiums. One is nanothermite, the most advanced science research on the collapse, the destruction, the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Nanothermite for your contribution of $50. And later in the program, when we return after the news, we'll be playing excerpts of 9/11, The Myth and the Reality, David Ray Griffin's seminal expose of nine myths, what he calls the sacred myths of 9/11. That's a two DVD set for $100, and a special combination of the two premiums for your contribution of $125. 212-209-2950. Michael, let's play a portion of nanothermite, the lecture. The first part of the lecture, he discusses controlled demolition. And in this part, he goes into the new research on nanothermite.
Architects and engineers then have signed up with this group demanding a real investigation of 9/11. Anyway, there are some that cry wolf, and they show this photo, and I want to show it to you. If you look at this photo, you see what looks to be a mushroom cloud extending upward from the collapse of the South Tower. It looks like a mushroom cloud, they use the term, blasting to the stratosphere. And they claim that this is evidence for a mini nuke, a small nuclear bomb, in the tower. Now, I've written a reply to this. You see, it's okay to come up with a hypothesis, but please present the data fairly. And so here's what we look at now from a side view, viewed from the west, the same event, the collapse of the South Tower. But what you see is that this so-called mushroom cloud, as it appears when you look from a certain angle at the South Tower, it looks like there's a mushroom cloud. In fact, that cloud is just the plume viewed from the west. It's the plume from the North Tower fires that is passing over the South Tower. You see, this plume is passing over. So when you look from here, it looks like a mushroom cloud. It is not evidence of a mini nuke at all. And there is other evidence that goes against the mini nuke, for instance, the lack of iodine-131 and samples tested about a month after 9/11-2001. I go through that in Journal of 9/11 Studies if you wish. It's okay to raise a hypothesis, but please look at the data fairly and don't send us on wild goose chases, crying wolf. People will get upset. For more information, you look at the Journal of 9/11 Studies and, of course, the papers published in the Morris. At the dust, and we're looking for explosive residues and materials in the dust. In the paper, we discussed four independently collected dust samples. One was collected within about 10 minutes after the collapse of the second tower, the North Tower. And the locations of the collections are shown in the blue circles. The orange-red circles here show the locations of the towers. And Jeanette McKinley's, the interior of her apartment is shown in this photograph. And her apartment was just across from the South Tower. And as she described, the windows broke as the South Tower collapsed. The windows of her apartment broke inward, and the dust flowed into her apartment. And then she provided me with a dust sample in the presence of witnesses, so that, and with photos, so there's a well-established chain of custody. She has since then provided dust samples to other scientists directly, without going through me or without me having any part of that. I mean, except to encourage other scientists to look, you see, to seek these samples. These are some views of the World Trade Center dust. We see these remarkable red gray chips, upper right, we'll talk about those some more, and remarkable spheres in abundance in the dust. Many of these are iron, rich in iron and aluminum and silicon together, a very unusual combination, which is not from melting of steel in the towers, because of the aluminum and silicon present in significant amounts in many of these droplets. And the molten, the previously molten nature of these droplets is shown by the fact that they have formed into spheres. When you blast water in the air, it forms into spheres by surface tension. Liquid metals will do that as well. They form into spheres and then cool, and you find all these spheres just in very large quantities then in the World Trade Center dust. Close-up photos through microscopes of the World Trade Center dust through a microscope of the red-gray chips. Can you see the in the right-hand photo, you see the red side, and then the insert shows one of these red-gray chips turned on its side, so you can see red on one side and this shiny black-gray surface on the other. Very characteristic, very interesting. We find it in all the samples that we have examined so far, the World Trade Center dust, which is six samples by Dr. Ferrer and myself. Four of these are reported on in this article. We keep looking at more samples. Others have observed these red-gray chips as well. This photo was taken by Mark Basil, a scientist in New Hampshire area, and he had a sample sent directly to him, I know, of the World Trade Center dust. Also observed in France by Dr. Frederic Henri Coignet. And you can see very clearly in this photomicrograph by Marc Basile, the red and the gray layers. Very distinctive, very unusual and striking. Now, this is the electron microscope and XEDS system used at Brigham Young University. Dr. Ferrer is the lab director, TEM lab director. He does excellent science and checked and rechecked and rechecked the data that went into this paper. Most of the photomicrographs and XEDS, well, certainly, I took a lot of the photomicrographs through the optical microscope. He did most of the electron microscope, the SEM and BSE images that you'll find in the with this machine that you'll find in this published paper. Okay, here's the paper as it appears now online. It is an open journal. We selected a journal that would allow us to publish a lot of data. There is something like 33 figures, 30, I can't remember exactly, 33 figures, color, 25 pages. That's a long paper. And this journal was willing to work with us. It took a long time, a very tedious peer review process, many pages of peer review on the initial submission, followed by this paper. This is a photo of Niels Harrit, who became the first author, long story there, and great fellow, professor, associate professor at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. He's been speaking out in Europe, for instance, Denmark and Paris. I know he's spoken out on these results and on 9/11 in general. Of course, he's very skeptical of the official story of 9/11 and agrees with the conclusions of this paper, which are that these red-gray chips, the red material in these chips is explosive or pyrotechnic material and should not have been in the buildings. That's his statement is, this material should not be in a commercial office building, certainly not in these quantities, as we'll see, some 9-plus tons of this red material in the World Trade Center dust, extrapolating and estimating, but that's a lot of material from what we've observed. I'll go through those numbers in a minute. We see these chips, the same characteristics as we'll see in all four samples. So we do a check, a consistency check between the various collectors, and we see the same signature in all four samples. This is now proceeding to higher magnification. This previous was an optical microscope. Proceeding to higher magnification in an electron microscope, we see the red layer here on top and the gray layer below. Proceeding to still higher magnification, I guess we'll have to wait. Okay, at this magnification, we can already look at and sample the red and gray layers to get an overview of the chemicals present. We use X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy that will be on the quiz. Please make note of it. And at first, we look here at the gray layers, which show oxygen and iron very clearly, a small carbon peak. And the question arose, I had this question early on compared to now. Perhaps what we're seeing is rust in the gray side, and the other is the red is just paint, you know, so we're going to check that hypothesis. We check very clearly. Looking at the red layers, however, there is no zinc, no manganese seen either. The composition, the nominal composition of A36 steel, as used in the World Trade Center towers, has about, 0.8 to 1.2% manganese. So where's the manganese? You look at that bottom plot, for example. These are the four samples showing the same, essentially the same chemical signature. The principal elements are the same. Anyway, no manganese and no zinc. It's starting to not look like steel from the buildings because of the lack of manganese, and not like paint either, not like primer paint, as we'll see, because of the lack of zinc. Notice the elements that are there. Carbon, significant peak. Oxygen, aluminum, silicon, and iron. Okay. The one peak, number three, has a small amount of calcium, potassium, and sulfur, but that could be some contamination. Dr. Fair was very careful to break these, if you can imagine these small chips, that he broke a piece and then looked at that fresh surface. There's so much calcium sulfate in the dust that you can quite often see calcium and sulfur showing up just for that reason, because of the wallboard. Okay, now here's a paint, the primer paint used by Tenemec, supplied by Tenemec for the World Trade Center. We see that in the pigment, this is from Appendix D of NIST report. You know, we get facts from NIST, and they simply report the pigment and the components in the primer paint, which is high in zinc, magnesium, aluminates, calcium, and so on. But the absence of zinc, again, shows that this is not the primer paint. Even Frank Greening admitted that, if you know Frank. Thank you, Frank. The zinc is not there. Let's go back. Zinc is not there. And others have said, well, maybe this is somehow, as the buildings fall, you just get a mix of, aluminum and zinc. All right, mixes up, and you get this wonderful red stuff. Sorry, where's the manganese, first of all? And where's the other junk that we find in the dust, which is zinc and chromium and calcium and so on in abundance, but you see those are not seen in abundance. There's a little apparent contamination in three, but the characteristic signature does not show any zinc or manganese. Okay. Mark Basil, I mentioned he's looking at this independently, has confirmed these principal ingredients. Now, he did not clean his surface, and so you see some surface contamination. Notice the calcium, titanium, copper, you know, again, all this stuff in the buildings. That's what you'd expect if this is just somehow a agglomeration of building materials. But there, when you clean the surface, as Dr. Farah did, then you do not see chromium or titanium or zinc. No zinc. Not paint. Certainly not the Tenemec primer paint used on the steel. This one, we tried to rotate the plot, were unable to. Beautiful photograph by Professor Henri Coignet in Marseille, France, using, again, electron microscopy methods. And his XEDS, again, shows iron, aluminum, silicon. He didn't clean the surface. So notice, can you read that? Contamination variable en calcium and sulfur, as you expect. Calcium sulfate is the principal component of wallboard. But notice again, well, it's a little hard to read. I'll spell it out then. The principal ingredients here in the red material.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, and now's the time to get on the phone, 212-209-2950. We have 15 minutes till the WBAI news. We have filled the hour with Richard Gage, AIA, and an incredible discussion of the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center towers and the beginnings, just an inkling of this incredible lecture by Dr. Stephen Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University, where he was pilloried for his work on 9/11. And this is on nanothermite, the incredible research that shows how there was a controlled demolition, what the device was, what the explosive material was that brought down the World Trade Center towers. 212-209-2950, nanothermite is a DVD for your $50 contribution. Later, we will be playing excerpts from 9/11, The Myth and Reality, David Ray Griffin exposing nine of what he calls the sacred myths. That's a two-DVD set for $100. And the combination of the two, a wonderful combination, yours for your gift to WBAI, your gift to yourself, that is keeping WBAI on the air, of $125. Ralph?
I want to make a particular point about this information, brothers and sisters. These are the results of the most meticulous scientific investigation of what actually took place in the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. The role of intelligence services in the putative hijackers, the hand of intelligence that is all over these events, amplifies what the physical evidence itself is capable of demonstrating. It is of critical importance that Stephen Jones and his associates have actually been able to establish scientifically and with laboratory work the components of the explosives which brought down the World Trade Center towers and established it definitively. And the work of Richard Gage, about whose report you heard today, brothers and sisters, amplifies the critical importance of these DVDs so that you are equipped with this data, with this evidence, with this definitive establishing of the role of authority, the inside job, the false flag nature of 9/11. Richard Gage came to us from Albuquerque, where he was addressing the University of Mexico and the New Mexican Technical Institute. And he was calling us from Kansas, where the student leaders at Johnson County Community College in Oberlin Park, Kansas, insisted that Richard and the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth be brought to them, and he is leaving for 14 cities in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, where he is going to be introduced by Senator Ukehisha Fujita, who is number three in terms of the power in Japan today, and a very active figure in 9/11 Truth. I mention this because this movement, this effort, this international relentless campaign to establish what occurred on 9/11 and to show the inside hand of authority, what we call treason at the top, treason at the top that illuminates the nature of the capitalist state is now worldwide a movement of growing intensity and specific gravity. It emphasizes the importance of this data, these DVDs that you brothers and sisters should have so you can be masters of the evidence yourself and part of this effort, this movement to expose the nature of power and the criminal character of the system in which we live.
And Ralph, we heard a little bit of Stephen Jones' humor, having been a professor for 20 years, where he says, and this will be on the exam, he's not giving a lecture to classes, he's giving a lecture to people like you and me and our listeners. And it's methodical. It is so easy to understand because of all the graphics and the photographs and the videos that are contained within his lectures that you cannot see because we're playing the audio portion of it. This is a comprehensive lecture, and I assure you that you will come away being able to explain to your friends, your family, your colleagues, what is meant by nanothermite, what is meant by the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center towers. That's how explanatory Stephen Jones is, how he breaks it all down. You don't have to be a nuclear physicist like he himself, and he has done extensive work for the U.S. government in nuclear physics and particularly on deuterium, one of the nuclear components, and he's done this for years. This is a man who knows of what he speaks, and the methodical approach to analyzing the material that was left from 9/11, that is left to us, because 99% of the steel was destroyed by the U.S. government. Remember this. And so working with the dust that was brought to him by people who had collected the dust, they have discovered what are the components of what brought down these World Trade Center buildings.
The debris and the steel, the residue of the collapse, was carted away. It was dispersed. It was immediately taken control of by the authorities and sent to China, sent out of the country, immediately taken into the custody of the military and the police, the clear indicator that they are covering up something. But as Maya indicates, the very fact that the concrete was reduced to microscopic powder and that the collapse of this of these vast towers with the enormous numbers of steel girders in seconds, in free fall, no pancaking but an utter collapse, was the evidence of a controlled operation. And the issue before Stephen Jones and his colleagues was to find the physical evidence of the explosive that would create this very effect. And in the dust, which is the residue of this explosive event that has been made available. And again, there were 90,000 tons of dust generated by this.
That's their estimate. Yes, Ralph.
So it is in this meticulous examination, physical examination, laboratory examination of the components of the dust, apart from the bone fragments and the human hair, the telltale signature of nanothermite, which is the result of the sulfidization of thermite, which produces thamite, is the evidence of the explosive that was the cause of the collapse of the towers.
Nanothermite, please, 212-209-2950. Please call in now for your contribution to WBAI. Keep taking AIM and other programs on the air. Nanothermite lecture by Dr. Stephen Jones in Sacramento in April of this year, $50 contribution. And also 9/11, the myth and reality, which we'll play an excerpt of later. Dr. David Ray Griffin, noted theologian, two DVDs, $100. The combined premium for $125. We're going to play another excerpt of Nanothermite between 8 and 9. I hope you can stay around. Please call your friends, your family, your colleagues. Tell them to tune in after the WBAI news. Again, the number to call is 212-209-2950. Ralph.
Brothers and sisters, we'll be on again at 7, and we want you to join us then. We hope to have Frank Morales with us. And we'll be discussing many of the underlying political aspects of this, and in particular the organizing that's going on to create an investigation, a definitive investigation, outside of the control of authority, where this vast array of data, of documentation, of scientific evidence, and of the expose evidence of the role of U.S. intelligence and of the military and of the rulers in the creation of 9/11 can be put all together, as we did with the tribunal on the war in Vietnam 40 years ago.
Let's look at the conclusions of Dr. Stephen Jones, Dr. Niels Harrit, and many of these other scientists. After all, the people who with whom he worked, from the University of Copenhagen, Denmark, from the Department of Physics and Astronomy of Brigham Young himself, and from Western Australia, from Perth, from Logical Systems, a consulting firm, and from S&J Scientific in Provo, Utah. These are among the places that the scientists, where they work. And their conclusion, only a shaped charge could cut the steel girders of the World Trade Center towers. And this is a shaped charge with demolition explosives that are not like the C4 that are used to bring down buildings, such as the buildings in Las Vegas, the controlled demolitions we see on TV. No, these are shaped charges with nanothermite, which is only accessible in Department of Defense and Department of Energy laboratories. Think about what they have discovered, these scientists. And that these red-gray chips that they find present in the dust, there is no presence of zinc at all, which would be the explanation of the government as being in the paint in the steel. It just doesn't exist. Also, these red-gray chips they found do not dissolve in paint thinner. But what do they show in the red-gray chips? Only the elements of thermite, of nanothermite, that is elemental aluminum and ferrous oxide. Please, 212-209-2950. Get on the phone and call to make your contribution to your station, WBAI.
So, brothers and sisters, as Maya has been explaining it, the presence of elements that would be present in the composition of the building itself are not present in these red and gray chips. What is present in these red and gray chips are the signature chemicals of high-level explosives, precisely the kind of charges that can cut through steel and that can bring down a building. Only that chemical composition is capable of producing that result. And that material for which the signature chemical composition has been established is absent in the building other than its imposition. There is no other more clear smoking gun of the inside job of 9/11. That is the significance and the importance of this seminal work by Stephen Jones and his colleagues, by Richard Gage. Please, you must have access to this material. It is pedagogic, it is systematic, it is explanatory, and it is powerful.
212-209-2950. Again, Nanothermite, the lecture by Dr. Stephen Jones in Sacramento in April of this year. High-quality DVD. Many special items on this DVD that you're not going to see anywhere except on the DVD. And as I said, this is a lecture that is so comprehensive and so straightforward with the diagrams and the photographs and the ease of his presentation. This is something you must have. I hear the music. We're about to go into the news. And remember, tune back in after the WBAI news at 7 o'clock. And we're going to have Frank Morales with us, a wonderful friend and a great speaker, and we're going to be discussing the politics of 9/11 before we again return to the physical evidence. Michael, take it away.
All right. Thank you very much, Ralph and Maya. Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. They'll be back. During fundraising, folks, the mission, our mission, is to raise funds to keep this radio station on the air. It's as simple as that. Of course, we want to do the programming that you tune in for, but we have to